Good afternoon. This afternoon, the United States Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces is holding oral argument in this beautiful courtroom at Washington and Lee. So for all manner and purposes, it will be conducted just as if we're in our courtroom in Washington, D.C. We're here as part of a program we call Project Outreach, which started in 1987. And since that time, we have gone out of the court for these sessions 130 times, 34 different states, and including twice on carriers underway at sea. This is our third visit to Washington and Lee. We were here in 1991, and in 2002, and in fact in 2002 was my first outreach, so it's nice to be back. We're also operating with one judge short. We have a vacancy on the court, and we are very honored today to have Senior Judge Royce Lambert of the District Court for the District of Columbia. Royce was the former chief judge of that court, who has graciously agreed to sit in with us today. The order of presentation today will be the appellant, the amicus in support of the appellant, the government, and then the appellant in rebuttal. Our counsel ready?
We are.
Okay.
Good afternoon. My name is Charles Ed Massey, and I represent the legal rights and interest of Corporal Matthew Hoffman as they relate to the issues in this case. Chief Judge, I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Granted.
The issues in this case are quite clear. There are two searches that we believe are not justified under the Constitution. The first search occurred in the barracks room of my client. After he gave permissive authorization to search, he subsequently withdrew that authorization, but after he withdrew his authorization, withdrew his consent, items were removed from the room. We certainly argue that that was an improper search and the items were seized illegally. The second issue.
The search was illegal or the seizure was illegal?
The seizure was illegal, Judge. He gave permissive authorization for the search initially, and then after the search had commenced, he then withdrew his consent, but the items were taken after he withdrew consent.
Didn't he ask for the items back when he rescinded the consent in writing?
He did so, Your Honor.
And what did the government, respond?
They
obviously they didn't give the stuff back.
They did not. In fact, they sat on it for 4 months. And our argument would be trying to find probable cause to justify the search of those items, because after they had seized the items, they then did an identification review of the teenagers that had been solicited. Only one could positively identify him. The other
Do we really need to get into all this stuff if they stacked it on a table and blah, 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 blah? The fact is there wasn't any search till March.
That's correct.
And well after consent was revoked in writing. Isn't that all we need?
I would agree, Judge, and I think that there was no meaningful interference with the items as has been argued by the government. There are some case law out there that's very specific to that, and because the items were not removed before the consent was revoked, we would indicate that those seizures were improper.
Well, they maybe shouldn't have sat on the stuff, but is that really relevant? The fact is they didn't search.
That's,
until substantially later.
They did not search the items or the electronic equipment.
That's
until
what I mean.
Four months later when they got a command authorization to search those items for child pornography.
Correct.
That's correct. So in that sense, we would argue that the command authorization was insufficient because there was no nexus, there was no intuitive connection between the solicitation and the child pornography. And the circuits have been very clear on this. The government has relied on United States versus Colbert, but the facts in this case are distinguishable from Colbert because in Colbert, the solicitation occurred and the accused was actually inviting the child back to his apartment to look at videos. In this particular case, the solicitation involved gestures made from a driver of a van, which was determined to be Corporal Hoffman, to young men. And so there was no digital media, there was no videos, there was never anything involved like that. So the command authorization that was sought basically gave the agents Schutz history as an expert in the field and indicated that there was a nexus or an intuitive connection between child pornography and child molestation
well,
to justify the search.
Well, it was more than that, wasn't it? I mean, it's not just, the special agent wasn't just proceeding on a hunch. The special agent spread before the commander acting as magistrate, I guess. Her training, her expertise, the courses she'd taken, blah, 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 blah. So it's more than simply post hoc error propter hoc, isn't it?
Judge, it was just a self, it was a self-prescribed review of her history and experience, and then the overview that there had been in 70 to 80% of cases a connectivity between child molestation and child pornography. But that's all there was.
Did she tell him that they had run the traps, the computer traps, on people who exchanged this stuff and had come up dry?
She had told him that they had done the identifications that I mentioned earlier, but there is no review in the record that says that they went through the canvassing, the GPS search, and most importantly, I think, the Internet Crimes Against Children site.
That's what I'm referring to.
Correct.
Because as I remember from the record, she said she did. He said he didn't remember ever hearing that.
That's correct. And in any event, there was no hints on the Internet Crimes Against Children site. So there was no connectivity between this particular client, my client, Corporal Matthew Hoffman, and any allegations of child pornography. It was simply...
Do you have a view as to whether there was greater or less probable cause to search the media that was seized, leaving aside whether the seizure was permissible? That there was greater or less probable cause in March than there was the initial date?
I certainly think there was less probable cause because a four-month time had elapsed and they had done all of these different avenues to try to connect Corporal Hoffman to the child pornography, and they simply could not. There was the canvassing revealed no connectivity. The Internet Against Children site did not reveal any connectivity. The GPS tracking device did not reveal any connectivity. And so there was no probable cause that connected Corporal Matthew Hoffman to the pornography. So we think that there was certainly less. And we think under the totality of the circumstances, the only thing that the government had to offer was the background of Officer Schutt or Agent Schutt and the connectivity that she alleged occurs between child molestation and child pornography.
You may not know the answer to this, but what does the GPS tracking device have to do with possession of child pornography?
It would show the areas that the accused was traveling to, whether he was accessing any inappropriate areas, going to get to websites, where his vehicle would be, if he was going to solicit other children, etc. So there would be some kind of tracking, monitoring his movements to determine if he was continuing to engage in inappropriate activities that may lead to child pornography. And so all of those things were presented, and well, they weren't all presented in the affidavit. There was this hour-long discussion that occurred between Agent Schutt and the commander. And, of course, we don't know the details of everything in the conversation. What we do know is there was an affidavit. And we do know that the affidavit hit some of the things, but it did not hit all of the things. For instance, it said two of the three could positively identify Corporal Hoffman. In fact, one could identify Corporal Hoffman with 95% probability. One was 50-50. And what was not stated in the affidavit is that one of the children, had misidentified and selected someone else as the culprit or the perpetrator in this particular case.
But didn't the affidavit also state that not all of the information that the agent had acquired was reflected in the affidavit?
That's correct, Your Honor. So we don't know what was in that conversation, but we've relied in our arguments on the other circuits that have found that mere conclusory statements are not enough. For instance, in United States versus Donahue, that was exactly their finding, that a conclusory statement by a agent is certainly not enough to warrant a command authorization to search for child pornography. And the other cases, we believe, set that forth as well. There are distinguishing factors in some of the other circuits from this case. In fact, in some cases, it's been found that there were hits on websites, inappropriate websites, by those that were accused. And certainly that establishes the connectivity or relationship between the child molestation and child pornography. But in this case, there was nothing of the sort. It was just simply a person that had been identified as the driver of a van, gave permissive authorization to search, site items were seized, sat for 4 months. Subsequently, a command authorization was then sought and granted, and that is when they surveyed and searched the computers and electronic media to find the items that resulted in the charges and the conviction of Corporal Matthew Hoffman.
Well, why can't an agent who has the experience and expertise of this agent make that kind of a statement that in her experience there is a connection between individuals who molest children and individuals who possess child pornography?
I certainly don't think it's a problem that she makes such an assertion. I just don't think, Your Honor, that it's enough. The conclusory statement in and of itself that any person that solicits a teenager, a child, is going to be a collector or possessor of child pornography is mere speculation and conjecture. There has to be more. There has to be some kind of identification on the website. There has to be something greater, some nexus, not just a mere causal possibility that something could have occurred. Certainly he has a right to protection of privacy in his personal equipment. He had the right to protection of privacy in his barracks room. He then had continued the right to privacy in his computer equipment for some 4 months that the government held it before they elected to get the command authorization to search it, arguably while they were trying to determine or find probable cause.
Counsel, you're talking. I'm sorry.
Oh, go ahead.
Please.
I was just going to say, when you say a nexus, what exactly is it that they need a nexus to, in your opinion? Is it a nexus to a computer, a nexus to child pornography, a nexus to some sort of digital media? What precisely do you think would be enough?
Yes, Your Honor, there has to be some kind of connectivity, a nexus, a joinder that exists between child molestation and child pornography as it relates to a particular case. In the other cases that were referenced...
But I'm asking you, what would that be?
Well, I think it would be that the person had registered on some inappropriate sites, he had viewed pornography in general, not necessarily child pornography, but had been known to view pornography, that someone else had seen the accused engaged in viewing pornography, like some of the cases referenced, a third party. But there was nothing in this case that connected
to it. The Eighth Circuit case that you said agreed was enough. I mean, the nexus was provided by him asking the kid if he wanted to come see a movie at his house.
Correct. In this case, there was nothing like that. There was no reference to any digital media whatsoever. There was no cameras involved in the alleged solicitation attempts. There was no discussions with the teenagers at all. In that case, the accused had basically had a conversation with a child for 40 minutes and enticed the child to come back to his apartment to view that child pornography, and that's known as a way to prepare or get a child ready to engage in inappropriate acts. And
now,
that
so
did
you
not...
You're talking about particular nexus in this case and other cases. What if there were multiple peer-reviewed studies that said 99% of instances where an individual had enticed a child, further investigation disclosed child pornography? In your view, would that be sufficient, or does there need to be something specific with this individual accused?
I think there still has to be something specific. I don't think any of us would want our rights challenged on just 70, 80, or even 90%. We have a right under the Fourth Amendment against unreasonable searches and seizures, and I simply think that you can't base it on percentages where statistical numbers can change from time to time. So I think that there has to be something greater than just a simple statement, a conclusory statement, that says there's a connectivity between child pornography and child molestation, and because there is, in theory, or because their studies have been shown that there can be, that gives authority to go in and search somebody's equipment to which they maintain a right of privacy. So I think for those reasons that there has to be more, Your Honor, than just that mere statement. Because if that were the case, there wouldn't, as far as routine police work goes, there could always be a search because they would simply draw the conclusion that, well, because the person was soliciting, there must be child pornography, so all searches are warranted in every case. Even in the Colbert case, it was indicated by the court that not in every circumstance would a search be warranted under those facts and circumstances. So I do think that there has to be a greater connectivity than just a mere conjecture, speculation, et cetera. In this case, certainly the Corporal Hoffman had the right to revoke his consent, which he did, not only verbally, but in writing. And even after he revoked it in writing, then our position has been and maintains, or we maintain, that first of all, the items were seized improperly, so they were taken improperly, and you can't allow fruit of the of the tree to.
Along those lines, if we agreed with you that the consent to seize was properly revoked, what then? What happens with the case?
Well, I think the biggest thing there, Judge, is it's indicative that the police work would have been appropriate to say, we're going to hold you, Corporal Hoffman, and we're going to obtain a warrant. But in this case, there was no effort. They had no plan. There was no plan once he revoked his permissive consent.
What I'm asking, though, is analytically, we say we agree with you, the consent to seize was revoked, and you nonetheless seized it. Analytically, what is the next step?
Then I think analytically that the case gets remanded back because we, in consistent with the court's decision, that those items can't be considered because they're fruits of an illegal search. So I think
an illegal seizure.
Or legal seizure. And that was a distinguishing mark that was raised in this case, is the difference between search and seizure. The government seems to argue that when he revoked his consent to search, but not to the seizure. And that's when the government got into the whole discussion about meaningful interference over the property. And I think the case law is clear. The case I like to rely on is State versus Cotton, where in that case a firearm was seized, but it was unloaded and removed from the room. After it was removed from the room, that was considered to be dominion and control over the item and therefore meaningful interference. In this case, meaningful interference did not occur until after the consent had been revoked. So there was no meaningful interference or dominion or control over these items. And then we get back then to the four-month period and back to the connectivity argument, the nexus argument, or intuitive connection between child pornography and child molestation, that ultimately led to the discovery of the child pornography for which my client was subsequently convicted. So we believe, going back to your Honor's question, that you cannot use illegally obtained items and then try to rescue that by saying they would have been inevitably discovered anyway. There's no rescue here. There was no proof offered by the government at all in the first search to show that probable cause was even present, and we argue that it wasn't. In the second search, all we have is the officer's or agent's bio, essentially, that was prescribed by her, and then we have this connectivity argument between child molestation and child pornography.
There's no inevitable discovery because even though they got a warrant, the warrant wasn't based on probable cause.
That's correct. That's our argument.
Yeah.
Yes, Judge.
Okay.
But now, if the warrant was not based on probable cause, if you're right on that argument, you still have a problem, don't you, about good faith?
Well, I think with the good faith,
the magistrate, the commanding officer acting as magistrate, certainly appears to have been acting in good faith when he listened to the investigating officer for an hour and considered her statements to him as well as her affidavit.
With the good faith exception, Judge, I think there would have to be a reliance on a total overview of what had happened in this case. We have an affidavit that at best is incomplete. I won't say that it's false or necessarily directly misleading, but it does not have all of the facts in it. It doesn't talk about the identification, the canvassing, the GPS, all those things that we've already talked about before this court.
Whose good faith are we looking at? Are we looking at the good faith of the person who gives the affidavit upon which the magistrate relies, or are we looking at the good faith of the magistrate?
I think it's the good faith of the person that searched the computer after the command authorization was given. And then I do think it does relate back, though, to the commander as to whether or not he was acting in good faith, and he may very well have been based on the limited information that he had. And I think that goes to the totality of circumstances test under United States versus Leedy and Illinois v. Gates. So I think for those reasons that the good faith exception in this case would not apply, and therefore it would be excluded.
The time's expired. You can resume on rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
We'll hear from the government.
Okay,
I'm sorry. We have an amicus in support. I apologize. Didn't mean to cut you off there.
No problem, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is Lauren Peck, and I'm speaking on behalf of Amicus Curiae in support of appellant Corporal Hoffman. Many issues in this case boil down to the answer to one question, and that's whether facts of child enticement alone are enough to support probable cause for the separate crime of child pornography when the only connection between the two is an affiant's belief that there is an intuitive link. Your Honor, the government is asking this court to embrace a theory of probable cause here that has not been accepted by any other federal court of appeals. Now, crucial to the question of inevitable discovery is whether probable cause existed at the time of the initial search on November 1st, 2011. And the Supreme
Court...
Probable
cause for what? It was a consent search until he revoked it. They got in there with consent.
Well, yes, Your Honor, but assuming that the seizure was illegal, the question for inevitable discovery is, if they did not have consent to seize, then at that time, would they have been able to obtain a warrant based on probable cause?
When you say, counsel, that that every circuit has rejected this notion that facts of child enticement are enough to create probable cause for the separate offense of child pornography, don't you think it's at least fair to say that some of the cases at least suggest that, there is an intuitive connection between the two?
Yes, Your Honor. I would agree with that. But no Federal Circuit Court of Appeals has said that that intuitive link alone establishes probable cause. On the contrary, the one case that has analogous facts on this same issue happens to come out of the Ninth Circuit. And we would turn the court's attention to Daugherty against City of Covina for a discussion of this issue, where the only facts present were an accusation of sexual abuse, sexual assault by a teacher with some of the students. And the only connection to child pornography there was an affiance experience and belief based on 14 years of working these types of cases that people that commit that type of crime also have in their possession child pornography. That's exactly what we have here.
Well, that is what the Ninth Circuit did, but there's no other circuit that did anything like that.
Well, Your Honor, that was the only circuit that had the intuitive link expressly stated, and they rejected it. But as a matter of fact,
intuitive link here is not the same as in the Ninth Circuit. Here, wasn't the agent a psychologist or psychologist as well? And her experience in psychology as well as her experience in cases is what she was putting in the affidavit, right?
Well, yes, Your Honor. She had a degree in psychology. And
does that make her an expert?
Well, more expert than a layperson.
Okay. But how does that affect this, then?
Well, yeah. In Illinois against Gates, the Supreme Court said that a court that's reviewing a probable cause determination, there's two primary considerations. First is the facts and circumstances in the affidavit, and second, there's the veracity, the basis of knowledge of the person supplying that information. And so what we have in this case is nothing in the first category. No facts or circumstances suggesting or indicating possession of child pornography. All we have is a basis of knowledge.
Well, what about the government's contention that it's a one-way street? You're soliciting kids. The lesser offense is possessing the porn. It's highly likely that somebody who's already taken the step of physically soliciting kids is going to have porn. It may not be intuitive that somebody who has porn is soliciting kids, but how do you answer that argument?
Well, yes, Your Honor. Well, it's not the first time that this argument has come up, and it's not the first time the government has tried to bootstrap possession of child pornography onto other sexual crimes against children in saying that it's a gateway crime. This has come up before the second...
Well, it's more than a gateway crime. It's kind of a ratchet, isn't it? That's the government's contention.
Yeah, Your Honor.
Yeah.
And the Second Circuit, the Third Circuit, the Fourth Circuit, and the Sixth Circuit, in addition to the Ninth Circuit, have all addressed cases where the only facts and circumstances in the affidavit relate to molestation, indecent liberties in the presence of minors, or sexual assault, but the government seeks a warrant to search for possession of child pornography based on the implied link, just like you're saying, that everyone that does that also does this. They start with that. And each of those circuits, Second Circuit, United States against Falso, Third Circuit, Virgin Islands against John, and United States against Pavu Lake, the Fourth Circuit and United States against Doyle, and the United States against Hodson, that's the Sixth Circuit, all of those rejected the government's argument.
But Have you found arguments along the same lines with respect to different types of offenses? So are you familiar with our opinion in Kefauver last term?
Yes, Your Honor.
Right, where the government's argument as to why they should be able to make a protective sweep was the common sense knowledge that guns follow drugs.
Yes, Your Honor.
And we rejected that.
That's true, Your Honor. And like the protective sweep doctrine, the probable cause doctrine also requires particularized facts in the noise against case. That's a basic part of a warrant. So just like guns follow drugs, intuition doesn't support a protective sweep.
Without something more.
Without some particularized fact. In this case, without some particularized fact of suggesting possession of child pornography, intuition alone does not support probable cause.
What in your view would be a sufficient fact?
Well, Your Honor, in Colbert, I think that's a good example. He admitted that he told a little girl on the playground, "I want you to come back to my apartment. I have some videos and some movies that I want to show you."
What if they found a single hit on one of these computer sweeps?
Excuse me, Your Honor.
The computer search that they did, ICAC, is that what it's called?
Yeah, Internet Crimes Against. I think that would stretch it. I think in Colbert, the court stretched it. And in fact, district courts within the Eighth Circuit have kind of backed off from Colbert, South Dakota in particular, in the United States against Houston. They said that those facts.
Because you're not disagreeing that there is a common sense intuitive link, right?
There is an intuitive link.
So all of these cases are very fact intensive.
Yes, Your Honor.
And I guess the question is, what would have been needed in this case, in addition to the intuitive nexus, which I think you're saying is okay, but it's not enough by itself, what would have constituted enough then? But what is that something else that this case is lacking?
Well, Your Honor, it's really lacking three things. And the first is a substantive nexus between enticement and child pornography. That would be any statement of videos, images, movies of child pornography. Then there's a proximate nexus, any connection between the enticement out on the streets of the town and his barracks, and also a temporal element, an indication as to when child pornography was possessed. All three of those nexus requirements, they're missing in that case. Any one of those would have bolstered this case.
Well, I mean, in this case, they went and they asked off his friends, right?
That's true.
To try and get negative thing, and there was no negative information. If they got some negative information about him and his interest in children or in talking about child pornography, would that, combined with the logical nexus between child enticement and child pornography, be enough?
Actually, Your Honor, I submit that it would not. And I would direct this court's attention to United States against Pavulak in the Third Circuit and United States against Doyle in the Fourth Circuit, where there was indication of child pornography or pictures of new children. People complained in each of those cases, this guy is watching or looking at pictures of new children. But in the warrant, there was no description. And under the statute, child pornography is a very small, it's a very narrow description. So without any description of what these pictures look like, those courts said even that is not enough.
I understand.
So I'd like to move in just a few minutes into, or just a few moments actually, into good faith. And here in this faith, the Supreme Court has stated that good faith turns on deterrence. Where there's nothing to deter, good faith applies. And when there's a magistrate with more legal training than the requesting officer, good faith should apply. But a commander is not a magistrate. And this court has recognized that in United States against Stuckey, that the probable cause determination made by commanders do not carry the same degree of reliability as those made by a military magistrate, simply because a military magistrate is not trained in the nuances of probable cause decisions in Fourth Amendment law. So to hide behind a commander's decision when Special Agent Shutt knew that she provided no description of child pornography images, no nexus to the barracks, no, that is not good faith, and that should not provide a shield for the government in this case. I'd just like to close. The government in this case violated Corporal Hoffman's Fourth Amendment rights multiple times at every step in their handling of his property. And the inevitable discovery does not erase these wrongs in this case because there was never probable cause. For these reasons, this court should remand this case for a new trial. Thank you.
Thank you, Counsel. Now we'll hear from the governor.
Good morning, Chief Judge Erdman. Your honors, may it please the court. My name is Captain Corey Carver, and along with Colonel Mark Jameson, on behalf of the United States. This court should affirm the findings and sentence because the military judge here did not abuse his discretion for the following two reasons. First, Agent Rivera had already seized appellant's laptop prior to any revocation. And second, the totality of the circumstances does support the probable cause determination of the commanding officer, who deserves substantial deference himself.
Counsel, they seized it, they walked out the door with it. The next day, consent was revoked in writing to both the search and the seizure. No search had taken place. Why didn't he get his stuff back? Why did the government sit on it?
Well, Your Honor, that would be a separate issue than what is actually before this court.
He just started talking about the seizure.
Correct, Your Honor. The seizure at the time of the actual consensual search.
The problem for the government is you got a revocation in writing the next day and says, give me my stuff back.
Your position seems to be that once the government has hands on it, that there's a seizure that can never be undone. And I mean, I'm sorry, but it's a common sense thing.
No, Your Honor.
They touched the stuff. It's still in his room, and he said, I don't want you to take it. I revoke my agreement to have you seize it.
Well, Your Honor, I would disagree with...
Leaving aside the written revocation and request to have his stuff returned the next day, how do you possibly justify that based on any case law?
Well, Your Honor, first, the government would concede that the attempted revocation the next day does deal with both the seizure as well as the search. However, we're talking about whether there was a seizure prior to any revocation. In United States v. Deese, does distinguish between a search and a seizure as well as a revocation between a search and a seizure.
Yeah, he revoked them both. Why didn't he get his stuff back?
Well, Your Honor,
why didn't he give it back when he did it in writing?
Well, Your Honor, at the time of the revocation, the proper revocation, the items had already been...
Well, there were two revocations, but let's concentrate on the second one. Why didn't he get his stuff back?
Your Honor, it's unclear from the record exactly what exactly was taking place during those four months time period.
It is indeed unclear.
Yes, Your Honor.
And the burden's on the government.
I mean, in Wallace, the person, the agent, had the computer. They had it outside of his house. He said, I don't want you to take it. And the issue wasn't whether he was able to still revoke his consent at that time. It was whether it was nonetheless just whether he revoked the seizure.
Well,
we found in that case that it was revoked, even though they had picked up his computer and walked it out of the house, which is certainly exercising greater dominion and control over his property than was the case here, where he hadn't left his room.
And no, Your Honor, I would disagree with the characterization of the United States v. Wallace. In that particular case, appellant gave a consensual search authorization to the investigators as they were taking the computer, as they were removing and attempting to seize that computer. Appellant immediately stated, I don't want you to take that computer. And the court found that was actually a revocation of the seizure of the computer and nothing else. In this particular case, during the 25 minutes of searching prior to any statements by the appellant, Agent Rivera began to remove all the media devices out of his room and collect them into a pile. He then went to the dresser and removed the appellant's laptop, which is where the child pornography was found. He took the laptop, placed that in the same pile with the other media devices with the intent to take with him after the search was completed. It was only after Agent Rivera began to place his hand on the computer tower, which is separate than the laptop, and look behind the computer tower to start to unplug the computer tower and the monitor that appellant stated specifically, quote, what are you doing? I told you could inspect it, and he asked him to stop searching. But the seizure had already taken place of the laptop itself because there had been a meaningful interference.
What difference does it make?
Well, Your Honor.
What difference does it make? He revoked the whole thing in writing the next day. The government hadn't searched anything. The government had no probable cause for anything. What difference does it make whether he put his hand on it or put it in a pile or pulled the plug or what?
Well, Your Honor, United States v. Deese does make a distinction between when revocation can take place. Now, asking for
I know
whether...
I what Deese says. Deese isn't very convenient for the government in this case.
Correct, Your Honor. However, it does distinguish between a revocation of...
What is the point the government is trying to make?
Well, Your Honor, that the initial seizure of appellant's laptop was proper based upon the permissive authorization to consent search.
You aren't answering my question. What is the point of this argument when the whole thing was revoked in writing the next day before any search had taken place and before even the government argues it had probable cause for anything?
Actually, Your Honor, the government does disagree that it didn't have probable cause at that time. They were attempting to pursue other leads such as the GPS.
All of which came up dry.
No, Your Honor, not all of which. There were identification that took place after the initial seizure
but,
of the
but
laptop.
But the next day, they didn't have probable cause for anything.
Well, Your Honor, the United States would disagree with that characterization. At that point, there was probable cause to search his laptop based upon the identification of appellant's vehicle by the children, including the photograph.
Well, that gets us into the second issue.
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
Correct, Your Honor. So okay. There would still need, the second issue would still need to piggyback on that first issue
but
in order to have that
go
probable
piggyback.
Cause.
Before we leave the first issue, if we were to agree with the appellant on the first issue, what's the government's view as to what status the case would be in at that point? What should happen?
Well, Your Honor,
if we find that the seizure was improper.
Your Honor, there, as the lower court addressed, although maybe there was some issues with the lower court's opinion here, however, the inevitable discovery doctrine would apply here based upon the testimony at the Article 39A session by Agent Rivera, based upon his expertise, which would obviously get us into the second issue, whether that was sufficient expertise.
And what if you don't prevail on any of those issues on the first issue?
Your Honor, if this court finds that the seizure, the revocation took place prior to the seizure and the revocation was proper, then and the inevitable discovery didn't happen, then the government, of course, that child pornography would not be admissible. It would be a violation of the Fourth Amendment.
Okay. Let's move to the second issue.
Yes, Your Honor. As to the probable cause determination, the court must analyze the probable cause determination within two layers of deference. Deference given to the military judge because it is an abuse of discretion standard, just like the seizure and the meaningful interference is an abuse of discretion standard. But here the second layer is substantial deference should be given to the commanding officer.
So we substantial give less deference than we would give to a trained magistrate.
Well, Your Honor, in Clayton, in 66 MJ at 423 and 24, this court used the word substantial deference giving to the commanding officer.
Well, but he's also supposed to bottom his findings on substantial findings. So what kind of standard is that?
Well, Your Honor.
We're supposed to substantially defer to somebody who's supposed to substantially bottom what he did. So where are we?
Well, Your Honor, the substantial deference is only given when there is a neutral and detached magistrate. In this case,
is a commander a neutral and detached magistrate?
Yes, Your Honor, as the military
given
judge.
Given his interest in good order and discipline?
Correct, Your Honor. He, in the hour and a half to 2 hour discussion he had with Special Agent Shute, he testified that Special Agent Shute helped him draw a direct line between someone who had solicited children to child pornography. And he states she built a nexus for him that it's a precursor, it's an enabler. And that's the two arguments that the United States has, as well as were adopted by the military judge, the commanding officer, Special Agent Shute, and United States v. Colbert, which is that child pornography is a precursor and a tool of the trade. Those are the two arguments. First, that it's a precursor because child pornography is simply the digital recording of child molestation. And second, as a tool of the trade. The Supreme Court recognized in Osborne, stating that, quote, pedophiles use child pornography to seduce other children into sexual activity.
Okay, so that now we're back to what's basically, well, it stands to reason, and my experience as a sexual agent, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, Mr. Commander, give me my warrant. Well, you ran the computer traps on child pornography. You came up dry. You put the GPS on his car, you came up dry. Number one, was this imparted to the commanding officer?
Yes, Your Honor, based upon the record, Special Agent Shute did testify.
Well, and he testified he didn't remember hearing any of that.
Well, you're Correct, Your Honor. However,
okay, so where does that leave us?
The prevailing party below, which is the military judge based his findings on, are not clearly erroneous because they are supported by Special Agent Shute's testimony at the Article 39A session.
Okay,
this court should view in light most favorable to the prevailing party and rely on Special Agent Shute's testimony that she did inform the commanding officer of all the identification issues that took place, some of which were provided in the affidavit as well, as well as the ICAC situation.
But, even if she did, counsel, how does any of that help you on the probable cause determination? Because as I asked the other counsel, when was probable cause stronger? Before you did all the government did all these inquiries and found no responsive information? Or after it was done, and any of the likely places you would expect to have him come up, or any of the things you'd expect to have people say about him, didn't happen.
Well, Your Honor, after would be greater probable cause because there was some evidence found at that time. The Jacksonville Police Department that was doing a parallel investigation at the time did an identification with ultimately the child that's found in the specification to which he was found guilty, and discovering that he was 95% certain that it was the appellant, as well as one of the other two that took place on base through NCIS, the identification stated that he believed it was that particular person.
But all
person.
The things with respect to child pornography, right, which is what we're focused on here, right, not the child enticement charge, the child pornography that the government's trying to bootstrap, right, all the evidence with respect to that, or probable cause with respect to whether that was going to be found on his computer, is less.
Well, Your Honor,
right? ICAC is what they use.
Yes, Your Honor, I wouldn't say less, but not certainly not more in that particular regard. An understanding of the ICAC task force, what they did is they looked for appellant's screen name, and it didn't appear on the ICAC, which simply meant that no officer who was part of ICAC task force had ever seen his name scrolling through the media. That doesn't mean that he wasn't doing it. So,
do they check peer-to-peer networks?
Your Honor, it's not in the record whether they did that. They only focus on the ICAC task force. The United States is unaware. The record is a little bit unclear exactly what they did. However, they did go through these steps to try to get more evidence leading towards trial to be able to convict appellant.
Right, and they got nothing. So what's that do to your probable cause when the special agent goes in and gives the commander, not a trained neutral magistrate, the commander, with his interest in good order and discipline, all his song and dance?
Well, Your Honor, I would disagree with the song and dance characterization
okay,
of that.
I apologize for the characterization. for all this stuff.
Well, Your Honor, the probable cause of termination is based upon the totality of the circumstances at the time of the request for search authorization.
Well, and do you agree that if one doesn't accept the intuitive leap between the IDs and all that and possession of child pornography, the government is out of court?
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you.
Counsel, let's go back to the affidavit for a moment. The agent put forth her experience and background, which I think everybody would agree is pretty impressive in this type of a case. And then she went in and described the intuitive nexus. And that is bothersome to the degree that it looks like it's just a verbatim, to a large degree, quote from Colbert. And in Colbert, the court noted that there was no intuitive nexus in the affidavit. And they said it doesn't exist there. And they went on, and all of this language that she's using, the Colbert Court just came up with. And so we don't have an expert psychologist or anything else testifying to that. We don't have this individual testifying in her own words as to what it is. We have a quote from a court where there wasn't any nexus in the affidavit.
Without citation.
That's right, Your Honor. And that was recognized by the lower court in a footnote as well, that she did get that language from there. But she did testify from her own knowledge that in all the cases, in all of her experience, 7.5 years in the family and sexual violence section and worked hundreds of cases in this area.
I mean, I'm not taking away her experience. What I'm concerned with is that this is literally a cut-and-paste job. And is that an independent determination on her part that the magistrate, the commander in this case, could rely on, and how much reliance should he put on it?
Yes, Your Honor, because she not just copy and paste that language. That copy and paste of that language would indicate that she was aware of the law, which would go into the good faith, having that objective, reasonable belief in probable cause determination. But it wasn't just a copy and paste. She did discuss that with the commanding officer in her own words, talking about in the hundreds of cases she's worked in this area, whenever there's child enticement or molestation type cases, there's child pornography found as well. Yeah. And that was based upon her experience, yes, but that was an independent determination that she made. Agent Rivera at the time talked about the 70 to 80% to correct appellant. He said, Special Agent Hsu said 70 to 80%. She actually said in all those cases she has found child pornography.
So 100% of the cases.
When they've looked for child pornography, yes, they found child pornography. And that's in her testimony in Article 39A. And she conveyed that to the commanding officer verbally as well, which this court can look to what the commanding officer knew at the time of authorizing the search, which is the affidavit as well as the communications he had with Special Agent Hsu.
In the government's view, what particularized information, and by particularized, I mean particular to this appellant, would have made the affidavit stronger?
Well,
I'm not saying that you had that information, but what sort of information would make it stronger?
Well, any number of things could make this stronger, including any type of media devices in his car, so that there wouldn't have to be a nexus between the car that he was driving around in to entice these children to his barracks room. That would be a stronger argument by the United States. However, that wasn't necessary. It would be sufficient and stronger, but not necessary. Here,
without the intuitive nexus, what was there in this case?
Well, there was the identification by the children themselves of appellant. Well, at least two of them,
okay,
one for
but I'm saying without the intuitive nexus.
The probable cause to search the electronic media.
Other than the particularity requirement and understanding that he had these media devices, there was no mention of a video or movie in the solicitation, so there wouldn't be anything here. However, in United States v. Colbert, which the military judge relied, in that case, in finding that there was probable cause to search for child pornography, the court did rely upon that intuitive relationship. Excuse me, Your Honor.
But in all of those cases, isn't there something more? I mean, they're not relying entirely on the intuitive nexus. They have something else. They have the fact that there was contact made over a computer, or they have inviting the child up to watch a movie, a digital movie. And
well, Your Honor, that is
in all of those cases, there is something more somewhere, and I'm trying to find it in this case.
Well, Your Honor, there's no mention of a movie, but in United States v. Colbert, him enticing that girl back to his apartment to watch a movie, there was no indication of what that movie was.
But the court relied on that.
The court relied upon, correct, Your Honor, the court relied upon the intuitive link, because although the appellant referenced the movie, there was no evidence either explicit or implicit that the movie contained child pornography. So in order to get to that probable cause determination in that case, that the movie or any media devices contain child pornography, that intuitive link was necessary.
Well, but you've got less here because they don't know he's got any movies. All they know is he's got a computer.
Correct, Your Honor.
That's all they got out of that search, regardless of its legitimacy. They know he had a computer.
Correct, Your Honor.
End stop.
Correct, Your Honor. And appellant's not contesting the particularity of the search authorization because they didn't know what media devices they were actually going to search. But here, again, in the United States v. Colbert court would have to have taken that intuitive leap between child enticement and child pornography.
Counsel, I mean, to change it to a different sort of offense, right? I mean, we can all intuitively guess that someone who is a drug dealer, right, someone who's a drug dealer almost certainly has both drugs and guns in their house, right? Would you like that to be the basis for a search authorization? Just the fact that we intuitively can guess that that's the case?
Well, not necessarily in that.
You would want something more.
Correct, in that particular case, although some...
Even if an expert said in every case where someone's a drug dealer, when we've gone to their house, we've found guns and we've found drugs.
Well, Your Honor, this would be a different context.
Why?
We're talking about child sex crimes where the law already views this in a different context than other types of crimes. We allow for that in evidentiary.
The Fourth Amendment applies the same, irrespective of the underlying offense, counsel.
Correct, Your Honor. However, the probable cause determination and an expert being able to get in and convey that to the commanding officer based upon her expertise, that wouldn't necessarily apply in other contexts.
Well,
we understand.
Someone having an expert from the ATF or whatever it is, ATF comes in and tells the magistrate, you know, I've been involved in, you know, 3,000 raids on drug dealers' homes, and in every single instance, we found drugs and we found guns. Can I please have a warrant? Because this is a drug dealer.
And, Your Honor, there have been some district courts that have allowed for that to happen. However, that's not
with
what the United States...
With nothing more.
Correct, Your Honor, but with the United States is only asking for the limiting principles in this particular case to be limited to child sex crimes like this, going one way from child molestation to child pornography. I see that my time's up.
You can finish
answering that thought.
Question.
Thank you, Your Honor. Requiring some sort of expert to inform the commanding officer that was vacant in the other circuits' cases in Virgin Islands as well as in Hudson, the reason why there wasn't probable cause there is because they just asserted it after the fact and it wasn't in the affidavit, that intuitive link. So it would require an expert to get in front of the commanding officer to inform that commanding officer. The commanding officer would still have to be a neutral and detached magistrate. And with those limiting principles here, this court could narrow it to child sex crimes as well as requiring that to be in the affidavit before the commanding officer expertise.
What you're asking us is that in child sex crimes, an intuitive nexus in this situation is sufficient.
Correct, Your Honor, with that expertise from whomever that needs to be before the commanding officer.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. Members of the court, this case has many problems, but I think the court's focus on the intuitive connection is very, very important. That standing alone simply is not enough to authorize a warrant to search that computer equipment. The facts are undisputed with respect to how the seizure of the property came into play, how subsequently the government held those items for 4 months, how they took various steps to try to rescue the evidence that they had seized, we believe seized unlawfully, and then tried to simply draw an intuitive connection between child pornography and child molestation in order to establish the justification for the command authorization. Our position is the outcome, the fact that child pornography was found after these problems existed, is simply not enough to rescue the improper seizure and the subsequent improper search of Corporal Hoffman's computer.
Well, the fact that it was found has nothing to do with what we're looking at.
That's correct, Judge, and that's the argument that I was trying to make. You can't use something that turned out very negative for Corporal Hoffman to be used to justify an improper search, an improper seizure. There was not a routine process followed by the officers in this particular case.
Counsel, do you agree that if we agree with you on issue one, that we don't reach issue two?
That's correct, Judge. Because if you improperly seize items, then you can't, and we know that consent was revoked not only before the seizure actually occurred, but also after in writing. If you can't properly seize them, unless you can have some kind of justification for going back and getting them later that's substantial, then certainly you cannot rise to the level of getting a command authorization for search.
We would have to grapple with inevitable discovery, correct?
That's correct. That's absolutely correct. And inevitable discovery alone is not enough to rescue the improper seizure of this equipment. And that's been the basis that we've stated from the beginning. If you can't get beyond the first problem, you don't even get to the second problem. But even if we get to the second problem, we still maintain that the intuitive connection alone is simply inadequate to justify what happened in this case with regards to the issuance of the command and authorization to search the Corporal Hoffman's computerized equipment. Thank you, members. If you have no further questions, that'll conclude my arguments.
Thank you. The court thanks all counsel for their arguments. In a few moments, the clerk will adjourn the court. The court will stay in place. And after that adjournment, we will go into an informal session and we will entertain questions from members of the audience. certainly with the caveat that no questions can be asked about this case or issues that were raised in this case, no matter how cleverly you try to word that.
All rise. The court stands adjourned until further order of the court. Please be seated.
Questions?